This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. We are now talking to Rachel Appel here at NDC Awesome. And you did two talks, testing and accessibility.
That's correct, John.
What are we talking about first?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter. How about accessibility?
Okay. So you're talking about web accessibility or everything accessibility?
Primarily web, but things that apply to web accessibility pretty much apply to any software. Things like getting users who are not necessarily able-bodied or anything of the spectrum of ability. And so I like to think of it as a spectrum. You have everything from fully sighted people to fully blind people and everything in between. People need to use assistive technologies with that. And even though they do that, there's still an underlying problem of web pages and software not being developed well. And what happens is if those things aren't developed well, then you need more accessible technology. And then more sites get developed not well, and then more accessible technology. And the accessible users end up saying things like, well, we'd rather just the websites work better than having to have extra technology, where regular people who don't have accessible needs don't have to go to this extra technology. So they kind of would rather it be more like, you know, it is for the average user. You also have more than visual stuff. You have auditory problems, where we need closed captioning. There's motor and cognitive accessible needs as well. So everything from folks who are prone to seizures, so things like don't put flickers and strobes and all kind of things like that on a website. It's one thing to share a little optical illusion with your friend, but it's another to have a website full of blingity things and say, hey, come here and look at this, and people do, and they just, right, you know, have a seizure. That Simpsons episode is actually kind of real. That actually happens. Other things like simply making the font size big on a web page is such a big bang for your buck. There's so many people that they end up, myself included, zooming. Because I'm wearing accessible technology now, like my glasses. People don't think that that's what an accessible technology is. I wouldn't necessarily need to even wear them if people would just up the font size on their websites. It is a 3-second change, and it really helps a lot. There's other things like that, such as using HTML semantic tags to lay out a page appropriately so that screen narrators can actually see what's going on in a page. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of these pages where people just construct it and a screen reader needs to go through it and narrate. And when it does this, it hits all the ads on the side and it doesn't know if there's advertisements there, if it's a menu, if it's applicable. And people who are, say, blind have to sit through that reader reading the menus, the bars on the side, and everything else every single time. Whereas a sighted user gets to just skim past that. Mm-hmm. So that kind of stinks for them. So if we properly design, let's say, semantic tags and what are called ARIA attributes, one of the W3 specs, then screen readers can pick up on that. And these changes literally only take minutes. Yet, if you look at the numbers, there's 1.4 billion people worldwide that have accessible needs, not just visual, but across the range. Mm-hmm. There's I think like 40 or 60 million in the U.S. that have just visual needs as well. How many people have glasses?
Right.
Lots of them. The baby boomers getting older and problems that come with aging, like sight and stuff like that.
Right. I have a question then. So. Yeah. Today's screen readers, are they doing a good job? Like if you have a nav element inside of your page, are they now aware of that and say, oh, this is a navigational section?
Yeah, that's actually what the big deal is. They prefer that you use the semantic elements because the readers are targeting that now. Mm-hmm. Maybe an older one might not, but most of them that are up to date will go after the semantic tags and the ARIA tags. Mm-hmm. If you just use divs and bans, it doesn't know what's in there. Mm-hmm. Or something simple as an alt tag on an image. A reader doesn't know what an image is.
Right.
That's why we have things like captchas,
because
computers don't parse that. So if you simply put in a nice descriptive alt tag, then that reader can tell the person what's in that image. Otherwise, it just says an image and the name of the image, which does nothing. It's a bad experience.
And literally, like the like header tags or nav tags, you can take a div and just change that to a header or a nav. It's basically another swap out
of another 5 second change. You just do it when you're refactoring, even on some old sites, and you can update them that way.
Can you explain ARIA to me? Like, if I get the header nav and the semantic tags section and article and all that. What is ARIA? Like, do I need to know about this?
There's not a lot to it, so it's good that way. ARIA stands for Accessible Rich Internet Applications, and it's also part of the spec. W3 owns that. And it's really just a set of attributes that you apply to HTML tags. Some of them are, say, if you're filling out a form and you need to properly label this form for people, for screen readers, and for people to be able to know what's going on, sighted users as well. And I would do things like, say, if I had a required field, we would normally put in some JavaScript or whatever to check that validation. Well, a screen reader doesn't know what JavaScript is doing. It's not a compiler. It's not a parser. It doesn't do that. So it goes, oh, JavaScript running. Okay, well, that says nothing. So if I go into a element and I say ARIA required equals true, the tag would actually be ARIA, A-R-I-A, dash required equal true, then that would tell the screen reader to tell the user this is a required field. Another thing people do is they put just the little red asterisk. So the screen reader says asterisk instead of required. So the users just think, you know, first name, asterisk. That's what they hear. That's kind of weird. I suggest that everybody go, get yourself a blindfold, download, say, NVDA or Web Anywhere, are very free, popular things, screen readers. Blindfold yourself and go through the sites that you've built and see if you can tell what's going on.
Yeah. I did that a few years ago, and it's shocking.
It is shocking the first time you do it. And try to actually navigate as somebody who cannot see. It is quite a very jaunting experience the first time you try it. It'll really make you think twice about at least visual accessibility, which is kind of the big one. The other ones like auditory, closed captioning, stuff like that helps. But visual is kind of the big one on the web, although we have the other ones to consider as well.
What about when you're building a site with React, Ember, Angular? What sort of impact does that have on
The spa sites, right. That's where it gets a little tricky. So the readers will pick up on the ARIA, the semantic tags. The only problem then is the dynamic nature of JavaScript.
Right.
So being that you're swapping pages in and out.
Right.
So there are some techniques you could do, such as there are some ARIA and semantic elements you can maybe add in there to let the reader know that you're going from one page to another.
Okay.
So it can help out a little bit that way.
Okay.
It does every time you navigate somewhere else, the screen reader has to stop and restart on that new page.
Okay.
The user's usually okay with that.
Right.
You just don't want it too jolting of an experience.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But you don't want that for sighted users either, jolting on them.
I'm wondering, I haven't tried this yet, so if I build a page and like the nav section usually is static, like it stays in the DOM, but I swap in a whole new content area somewhere, does the screen reader start completely over and read through navigation?
It does. So what you could do for this, this is really easy. You can create what's called a skip link. Skip links tell the reader, skip over the navigation, ads or whatever, and go right to the good stuff. So you would provide a skip link. And all it is an anchor tag, a named anchor tag. Mm. So you do the name and the ref equals pound, and then you tell it to go to the content section. And that's where the screen reader will go to. And it takes, you know, less than a minute to go in and add one or two of these into your page.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people to go to a site called WebAIM, and it's WebAIM, webaim.org, and they have cool tools there. But one of the things that they use, skip links, in the very best way. So what they do is they have their links, and they have it all skipped out, so readers... It would be ironic if the accessibility site didn't do this, so it works very well there, and that's kind of the canonical example for things like that.
So how did you get interested and involved in accessibility?
I worked for the government.
There you go.
I did a lot of work for the state of Pennsylvania and other states and the Navy a bit, and so you are required to do the Section 508 accessibility. So they have a bunch of accessible guidelines, and if you do anything for federal, state, or even schools and local authority, you have to comply with these. So I'm aware of it from doing that stuff. But it's also just the fact that, there's a lot of users, myself including, that I keep zooming in and upping the font size. And even for what we would say is an able-bodied user, these things are kind of annoying to those people as well.
Right.
So I find that if you make things accessible, it actually adds to the quality of your software and your UI and your UX experience. Mm-hmm. So things that are accessible are actually things that are good for the masses too.
Right.
And I see things like these popular sites like, calling you out, Forbes and Business Insider and anything with cat, like cheeseburger stuff. Mm-hmm. People like their cat pictures. But then you have these pop-ups. Ads and a tiny, tiny close box. And I'm even, I got carpal tunnel, another issue, using alternative input. Mouse is getting a little harder, and trying to click those tiny buttons, I miss it half the time. Mm-hmm. And then the page reloads or something stupid.
So then you follow the ad accidentally.
Right. Accidentally follow the ad, or an ad and another ad pops up on the ad. It's like ads all the way down on some sites.
The most annoying one, they actually did change this, but I think it was CNET. It was Mary Jo Foley's. And sometimes I would click in the border just to set the focus.
Yeah.
And when you click in the border, it would do a pop-up.
I hate that.
I was like, I hate you forever.
Awesome. So if it's bad for us, imagine how bad it is for somebody who has an accessible need, mm-hmm. who is not sighted or has needs to use an input device, such as we have. All the way from, say, Stephen Hawking would use, mm-hmm. he used the Sip and Puff at one time, and now he has a Blink thing, and there's alternative keyboards, there's a whole list of different input devices outside of mouse and trackpad that people need to use because they just can't use the mouse or keyboard necessarily. And those kind of pop-ups just completely destroy the experience for those people. Mm-hmm. And what happens is they leave the site entirely. They cannot use it. And the funny thing is, the numbers that I gave you before is 20% of the population. Mm-hmm. Now, if you take any manager worth their salt in mm-hmm. any company anywhere and you say, I'm going to get you 20% more people, they would be all over that stuff. But yet, they're not. Everybody's basically throwing away 20% of people for these tiny, tiny changes that you can make. Mm-hmm. It's such a bang for the buck. And kind of almost an unknown thing. Right. It's amazing that more people don't do this just for those numbers even.
Right. So you mentioned trying a screen reader. You mentioned the website, which I forget already.
WebAIM.
WebAIM. That'll be in the show notes. Is there anything else or any libraries that help with this?
Yeah. So go to WebAIM. And they have what's called the Wave Scanner. So you plunk in, I love to do this, I'll go, and I picked out Microsoft's Accessibility Center, calling you out, since I was going to email someone about this. So they have an Accessibility Center on MSDN. Mm. So I said, let's go look at that and run it through the tool. And the tool will tell you things like, are you using alt tags? Do you have your semantic tags? Do you have your, all these little things? Are you doing the pop-ups, et cetera? Oh, contrast. You need good contrast for people as well. So it'll check these, and it'll show you a picture of the web page you chose, inside of their web page, and it marks up everything and tells you. And you can even download this tool and run it locally across your pages. So you don't have to just do one-off. So you do this, and I'm like, 51 errors, MSDN. Somebody, I hope, is listening right now. If only we knew someone at Microsoft, John.
I'll ask around. We're at a conference, maybe somebody here. And one other thing that I was thinking of while we were talking about vision, and also just to change the subject, of course, but you're talking about sight, and just one other thing is colorblindness. Is that something I need to worry about?
Actually, and it's not a big thing to worry about, but there is a decent percent of the population that is colorblind. Do you know why Facebook is blue?
I do not.
Because Mr. Zuckerberg is colorblind.
Oh.
That is why it's blue. Yeah. So what happens is there's three types of color blindness, and I have a hard time pronouncing them. But you could do things like if you run it through that scanner, or there's something called it's called the Color Oracle. You could download this little tool, and it runs in by the clock area in your tray. And you just take it and you say, whatever's on my screen, show me what that would look like to a person with one of these three color blindness. And if I take my site, which is a dark blue and white background, And it shows, like, you know, regular vision is dark blue. With one of the color blindness, it's like a purplish looking. Another one is green, and my face even looks green. And I'm like, well, I don't care about that part. Can't really do anything about that, I guess. Yeah. So that can happen. So to know, to realize things such as if you have submit and cancel buttons and they're not battleship gray or, you know, your stock color, if you make them red and green, that may look different to people. So you just want to watch things like, because sometimes red means stop to most people,
right,
and green means go. So if you have submit and cancel, you want to make sure that those actually look appropriate. But that only takes, again, a few minutes, and then you just go and change the color of that.
Some of the dashboards I've built for hospitals, we had someone tell us that they couldn't tell the difference between the red and the yellow and the green. Or maybe it was just the yellow and the green. So we had to...
Probably red and green.
Not only have the colors in the dashboard, but also have symbols there.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing, too. You should also have some kind of symbol so that people can see, you know, clearly. Because, again, color... kind of like the stoplight, you know, it doesn't matter the color. The thing on the top makes you stop, right? And the thing on the bottom is your green and you go.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so you did another talk on testing.
Yeah, testing all the things.
Testing all the things. So web testing or what?
Yeah, I specifically targeted MVC. And it's one of these kind of everything plus the kitchen sink kind of talks. So It mostly, you know, why would you test? Like all these good reasons in case people don't know. And then, so you want to go testing. Let's take a look at XUnit and do a little bit in C# on the server, and then a little bit of QUnit on the client, and then a tiny bit of just, hey, there's this thing called UI automation testing. Why don't you run some of those as well? So I usually tell people, if you're going to start testing, start with some unit tests and then go into UI tests, the automation tests, and then go into the other stuff like regression testing and all the other, you know, fancy pants things, but kind of start there. So I like, I kind of like doing the automation testing now. I think that's kind of another hidden gem. Like Visual Studio has coded UI tests and everybody blank stares and goes, what? Yeah, file new project you can even do with this. You even point and click and it'll record and behave like the user. And that's a great way to do that testing. I find a lot of clients trying to unit test that kind of stuff. No, there's a different kind of test for that.
And that works against desktop and web applications, right?
The UI, yeah, the coded UI
it's
does.
Really just automating the browser.
Whatever's on the screen, technically,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And those are easy to set up. You basically just, you can just record yourself interacting.
Yeah, coded UI, you just do a file new project, and when it builds the project, it actually pops up a dialogue and says, do you want to start recording now? Just click OK, and as you click on different text boxes or buttons or, you know, close or open, it just records those actions and does them again and again.
Do you ever run into timing problems at all?
Yeah, of course, stuff like that happens once in a while and all that, but you kind of work through that and depending on the situation.
Right.
Does that work okay with single-page apps? Can I still keep using that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. Basically, consider the coded UI test a user. So it would be if you sat down a user and said, you try doing this. Actually, it would be probably a good idea to sit down a user and say, I've set up this project.
Oh, yeah.
You just do that, and we'll record it and kind of see how that works. You can also do it as a developer.
I've never heard of that before, but, you know, actually have a user record it.
Why should we do all the work? I mean, come on. They got to test it eventually.
Yeah.
So why don't you try a little bit of that, or QA person?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Does that come in every edition of Visual Studio?
I don't think Express, but the other ones.
Okay.
Cool. It comes in Express other than the actual editor.
Some compilers, maybe. Yeah. So when you're not testing, when you're not calling people out for accessibility problems, what do you do to relax or have fun?
I come to Norway. Actually, after this, I'm going to Amsterdam. Yeah.
Well, I've heard that you can relax there.
So I've heard that, too.
Yeah. You can relax some places in the States now, too, I've heard.
Not Texas. Not Florida, either. Well, you could go to the beach. It's just in certain parts, there's crazy people.
Anyway, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you, also, from me. I don't know what to say. You can have a pin. You can have a Herding Code pin.
Woo!
You're supposed to say thanks for listening.
Oh, thanks for listening.
There you go.
Good thing I edit these.